Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet John David Anderson, author, grown man with the heart of a 12-year-old, the kind of guy who would see a downed trash can and take the leap. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 267 of the podcast with John David Anderson, author of Miss Bixby's Last Day, published by Walden Pond Press, who is sponsoring the podcast. There are a couple of things you need to know about Dave's story. First, there are three boys, Brand, Topher, and Steve. They're all in the same class together. They're all in sixth grade. Each of these friends takes turns sharing the narrative, and each shares a great deal of love for their teacher, Ms. Bixby, who must spend the last days of the school year in the hospital. The second thing you should know is that the party planned for Ms. Bixby's last day was canceled when she was moved to the hospital earlier than expected, which is why our three boys set out on a mission to bring the last day party to the feet of their favorite teacher. And the final thing you should know about this book is that it will make you feel. It will make you feel all the feels. As Miss Bixby would say, nothing worth doing is easy. Enjoy the adventure. Here's episode number 267 of the podcast with John David Anderson. Welcome to the podcast, John David Anderson. I have anticipated talking to you for a long time. I'm glad we're finally getting to sit down to do this.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm pretty excited.
So, Dave, you've got this gorgeous book. You have a lot of wonderful books. Let me start off by saying that you are in our libraries. I'm glad that you are represented on our shelves and by our readers. But Miss Bixby's Last Day is a book that I think is really shaking a lot of us to the core in a beautiful way, in a way that it makes me really grateful to know that you are a writer and that this is a story that is going to be in the hands of children. So thank you up front for sharing this story with me.
Wow. Thank you for thanking me. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, the thing with Bixby is it's definitely different from all the other books that I have in the library currently.
Yeah.
But it was nice to be able to explore it and to have a publishing company and editor and all the people who were behind me who said, yeah, go for it. You know, do something different. Go off the beaten path. Explore this other side of your artistry and craft. And that's actually how it started in a lot of ways was a writing exercise on my part. I was just like, well, you know what? Let's try this multi-narrator thing and give these boys a quest to go on to and see if I can take it apart in three different ways and put it back together and what that looks like. And it was a painstaking process. I mean, it was definitely the hardest book I've ever had to write, but it was probably the most rewarding because of it.
Well, I can see the time and labor and care you put into this story, and I'm grateful for what emerged on the other side, because it's something beautiful. But before I dive into
sure.
so much love, as you can tell, there will be no shortage of that. Dave, why don't I give you a chance to share with the people listening what is the story of Miss Bixby's last day?
So Mrs. Bixby is a teacher who, for medical reasons, has to leave the school year early. And as, you know, from experiences that I've had with other people, you know, when you have to leave, generally they like to throw you a little party and a little classroom party. And so there's going to be cupcakes and all this stuff. Well, it turns out that she actually has to leave even sooner than they thought. And so this last day that she's supposed to have in the classroom doesn't happen. And so these three boys, who she's had a tremendous impact on, decide that they are going to skip school and they are going to bring the last day to her in the hospital. They're basically going to break her out of the hospital and give her the last day that she deserves. And so the entire novel takes place over one day. It's this one day and all the things that the boys do in order to provide the kind of send-off that they think Miss Bixby deserves. And in that way, it's kind of like the quest for the Holy Grail. There's this idea that if they can do it all perfectly and get all the right elements, and there's various things that they need for reasons that the novel goes into as it progresses. I mean, they need a cheesecake and they're looking for a bottle of wine and other things. And if they can get that all perfect, then somehow the thought is that, you know, they can reverse the bad things that have happened or at the very least celebrate all the good things that she's done for them. And that's it. I mean, that's the story in a nutshell, is all the adventures that these three boys go through. But more than the story of their relationship with her, I think what the book sets out to explore is their relationship with each other and their friendship and how that gets tested along the way during this one day and this quest that they have.
I would agree, hands down. And I would say that you need to share with us as soon as Steven Spielberg buys the rights to this movie. It's just this gorgeous, it's a gorgeous story that feels like it's got, because it feels so rooted in real life, but also feels like a story that is something that we all can connect to in different entry points. It feels like a story that exists in that way. So I hope you don't mind me being so forward to say that. But
no, and if you know Steven Spielberg, by all means, pass the book along to him.
I do have a friend that apparently spotted him in Starbucks the other day, hey, as Carter was sharing with me today.
6 degrees.
There you go.
However it happens.
There you go. Well, I really admired, Dave, the way that your boys, Topher and Steve and Brand, the way that they've got such unique voices, but such fully realized voices, and that these sixth grade boys felt real to me. They felt like the boy that I was that many years ago, and it felt like the boys that I teach now. And so I think for me coming into this conversation, the weight that I was feeling on my shoulders that I wanted to communicate to you was just my gratitude and applause for how well you have captured that 12-year-old boy and the relationship of boys that way, and the beauty then of them wanting to do this one final beautiful act for this teacher that they love.
And that was obviously the big challenge in writing it. Not only how do you differentiate these three boys, but how do you give each of their stories the proper balance? And I can tell you that, you know, through the drafting process, it would fluctuate. At times it'd be like, this is Brand's story, and then it would switch and it'd be more Topher's story because Topher's more like me, and so I was more comfortable writing his voice. And then I would start to figure out something having to do with Steve and his voice, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wow, well, this is the guy. He's the protagonist. you know, and so for a long time, I think in the writing process, I was just floundering, trying to figure out who the hero of the story was, you know, and I eventually came to the conclusion, you know, there's four protagonists. What are you going to do, right? There's the three boys and Miss Bixby, and getting that proper balance where each of them could have their own mini quest within the larger quest and have their own evolution and their own growth and come to their own epiphanies, whatever they were. That was really a drafting revision process, you know, through the time when I showed it to my editor. I believe the word he showed he used for it was embryonic, and he said, "You know, embryonic." He said, "This is brilliant, you know, but it's in this very sort of nascent stage." And he helped me tease out all the things that were going inside of each of these three narrators' heads, because they were really rich worlds once I get inside them.
There was such wisdom in these boys and in Miss Bixby, in really all of your protagonists, and the way that they reveal themselves in these stories. I loved that as we do rotate from one character to another. And this is something that a number of my friends have said. I think my friend Blake actually said it first, how beautiful Bixby is written, that you are reading a chapter from Topher and the chapter ends and next we pick up with whomever, with Steve. But you actually look forward to the next person's perspective and the next and the next. It's not as if there's one strong voice. That wrestling that you did to find your protagonist and ultimately find that it was all four, I think really pays out well through your editing, through the drafts that you went through all of the way you tempered those voices. There's a really great balance. And I really valued the way that while this story all takes place in a day, it takes place in a day in flashbacks.
Yes.
Isn't that the way that we remember people? We remember them on that day, and we also remember them through the memories that we have of them and of us and what, you know, profound influence in ways that we know and don't know that they've had on us.
And what I love about that is this notion that, you know, 12-year-olds, a 12-year-old having a flashback, right? I mean, it seems seems almost oxymoronic, right? And you're like, 12-year-old, you haven't lived yet. You know, what are you flashing back to? But of course, it's not true. By the age of 12, you know, we've experienced heartbreak and we've experienced responsibility and we've experienced disloyalty and all these really tough emotions, and we're grappling with them. And I think Willa Cather said something like, you know, an author knows everything they need to know by the age of 15, you know, to write a great story. And I would say, you know, in this case, 12, or maybe even younger. And so these boys do have the capacity to reflect and learn and grow. And, you know, I'm a 12-year-old boy at heart, too. And I have these moments where, you know, half my life is fart jokes and eating chocolate and, you know, hanging out and playing Legos with my kids. And then every now and then I step back and see something beautiful or something profound or something actually terrible and agonizing, and it throws everything into perspective. And I think that's what this quest does for these boys, is it throws everything into perspective for them, and hopefully it does it for the reader too, you know.
Yeah, you've got these flipping pages in the background while I'm listening to you, because this is one of those rare books that I found that I was making dog ears on the pages because I wanted to remember certain lines, and then I just ultimately took out a highlighter and just started highlighting lines because there were these things that you say and the way that you say them that I feel like they're profound, and yet I understand them coming from 12-year-olds, and it makes me sort of love my students even more deeply. In reading your book, that was an experience that I went through. It's just feeling like I know that fierce love that they have for one another and for other people in their life. And so there's a line that I think almost all the boys share going through the story, and it's referred to as a Bixbyism, but that, that line, "Nothing worth doing is easy," that they just sort of keep coming back to, "Well, we're doing this and nothing worth doing is easy." And the way that you have the boys talk about the numbers that are up against her and how numbers matter as much as they do, but then how sometimes they just don't at all. You've got these great sort of conflicting quotes, sort of that, the understanding of everything matters except in the cases when it doesn't.
Right.
I like that. And I feel like that's understanding this world, knowing that all the truths that you have, there's going to be something that upsets everything. And that's just the way it is. That's the constant. Things changing is the constant.
And a small miracle is still a miracle, you know,
yes,
in and of itself. And I know a lot of people have commented on the fact that it's kind of a sad book, but it is. I won't put it down. You know, it's got its tear-jerking moments, but I think it's also very hopeful and uplifting in a lot of ways because of those individual moments of lucidity that the characters have, where they finally come to either an acceptance or an understanding, or in a lot of cases, just a celebration. They're like, you know, or they just get headstrong and stubborn and say, you know what, to heck with it. We're going to do this, right? Even though it's completely against what we've been taught, even though we might get arrested, you know, whatever yes. it is.
Yeah, you know, can we talk about the, the situations these boys come in? For example, when they're like, you can tell that I'm dancing around not wanting to give away
right.
too much in this, but I think that there are things that we can talk about. Like you mentioned the sort of the Holy Grail items, which are really neat the way you lay them out, because we see the boys talking about, oh yeah, well, you know what next item we have to get. Oh yeah, we all know that. But we, the reader, don't. So it's, guys, what are you talking about? but at one point, as you said earlier, they are determined to get a bottle of wine. And you see that the logic put right up front. Well, it's illegal to do this. We can't do this. How are we going to do this? Oh, well, let's just pick a guy. We'll figure out a guy. Let's pick, which one can we pick? Let's choose someone who's alone. And this one looks like, you know, has got the tattoos and the toughness that he surely would be willing to risk the law in order to get us a bottle of wine.
Sure, right. He's got to be seedy enough, you
that's
know,
right. Just,
that he's
yeah.
willing to engage in the criminal activity himself. But not so seedy that he's going to throw you in the back of the van, right, and take you somewhere.
That's right.
Tough call to make. I actually, the moments I really enjoyed about the book were places where the humor could come out. And because, you know, I could feel the weight of things pressing down on me too as the book was progressing. And so, the scene when they do have to purchase the bottle of wine, and, you know, I'm not a connoisseur, of wine, in fact. And so I was just sort of doing all this research and figuring out, like, oh, what kind of wine would you pair with this other thing?
Yes.
And then how would a 12-year-old boy, I mean, can you imagine being 12 years old and just looking at, you know, all of the huge list and selection and all these names and all this Italian and just having no idea. I mean, they're so in over their heads, but they apply their own logic to it, you know, and that's the beauty of it is, you know, they're resourceful and kids are resourceful and they're incredibly resourceful and more than adults imaginative.
Yes.
And so it's their ability to apply their resourcefulness and their imagination and their determination. And through those three things, they will find a way to get through. But it's going to be comical at times.
There is a scene where the boys are in pursuit of someone running away and the way that they talk to each other like police officers in pursuit
right.
and the brand seeing the trash can knocked over and going around it, but is it Topher that's like,
it's Topher
I'm going over,
yeah, he's
gonna,
Superman, yeah,
the way that you read that and it just feels, this is the quality of your writing. I love that you're able to do this, but it just, I could feel sort of the slow motion of what's about to happen. There are so many moments time after time in the story that I was laughing out loud, which I think is also a really great quality of a book that, you know, is going to have its sad moments, being able to have the highs and the lows, being able to laugh along with the kids. It's just, it's awesome. There's so many parts in here that I want others to read, especially my students, so that I can say that part with the trash can and just have them be like, I know, right?
Yeah.
It's just, this is sort of where I think where I always fall back into that fanboy place of authors, and knowing that you've edited this over and over and you, for God's sakes, you wrote these words down somehow, but to have them work the way they do is beautiful on the page, to have them flow this way and to transport us as readers. That it's really, I think, a testament to the skill that you have as an author, Dave. It's just, it's awesome. This book is, it's such an amazing read. I really had a fun time with it.
Skill. Wow.
Skill. Mad skill. You've got mad skill.
Yeah. I'm going to go inspiration, maybe a little bit of luck, maybe Jordan Brown, my editor. Yeah. I will say that that scene where Topher is jumping over the trash can, I mean, that was me as a young kid.
You are the one that jumps over. I am totally the one that would go around.
No, I'm the one that would try to jump over, but would also, you know, fail miserably. But I would hear in my head exactly what you were saying. The theme music and the trumpet fanfare and all these things, because my imaginative world, my internal world, was always more interesting and adventurous than what was actually going on outside of me. And I think with Topher, it's the same thing. Like, all right, we're going to have to up the excitement factor here. And the only way we can do that is going over the trash can.
Yes.
So here we go. And, you know, Brand, of course, because of his past experience and what he deals with, just has a more practical approach. He's like, dude, we got to get there any way we can.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was really the most fun for me, was when switching voices, getting back into the head of the person that I was writing in during that day. Because it was like a new discovery. Like, it was like Christmas time all over again. I'm like, oh, great, we're back to Topher. And you said that earlier when you're like so excited to look forward to the next voice. Well, it was the exact same for me as a writer, because I would wake up and it would be a different day and a different voice. And, you know, I think I mentioned this at one point in a blog or something, but each of the voices sort of had a different impetus to it. So, like, Brand was the one telling me to advance the story. He was like, all right, we're talking about important stuff here, so let's talk about it. And Topher was the one telling me, all right, let's make this fun and adventurous and exciting. And Steve was really the sly one. And for a long time, I couldn't figure out what his voice was trying to get me to do. But I think in a lot of ways, a lot of the good philosophy, a lot of the contradictory stuff, a lot of the conflict that these characters face, I think Steve voices it better than any of them, because he pulls from so many different sources and he has so much going on inside of his head. And so it was fun to, like, he is the voice that was most unnatural to me as a writer and the one I had to work the hardest on. But as a result of that, he was also the one that I discovered the most through.
Mm. Yeah.
Which was kind of neat, because I kind of knew what Brand was going to say, right? And I kind of knew what Topher was going to say every day. And so it was like the excitement and eagerness of, all right, it was in my head. I just had to get it out.
Just getting it out, yeah.
Yeah. But sitting down to write Steve and all of his stuff, it was really an exploration. Like,
yeah.
Would this? Could he say that? And, like, how would he approach this and that? It was fun.
To have to really listen to your character in that way and go, no, this isn't what he would say. No, this is. Here's the voice.
Right. Yeah.
That's great. The boys don't shy away from the things that they love, which is a boy thing. I love how much they talk about Steven Spielberg movies, and I love the way that they have these different qualities that I feel like there were so many moments in my growing up that I had those reference points, that there's a movie or a thing that you just really love, and it becomes a shorthand with your friends. For me, there was a shorthand when we talked about Mario 3. Super Mario 3 had come out. There was a shorthand when we talked about that. And there was a shorthand when we talked about Monty Python. And there was a shorthand when we talked about E.T. And to see the shorthand with the boys that way, and that they don't have to work to get into that headspace. They sort of click into it. That's a really authentic and beautiful thing. And it makes me think of that experience for you as a writer, to sort of just, like you're saying, sit down and just listen to them talk.
Well, and the shared narratives, you know,
yeah.
And that's what any group of friends have,
is
essentially their shared narrative, you know, their stories, not only of their own experience with each other, but the things that they love and appreciate and see in the world. And that's what these boys discover in Mrs. Bixby too. Because she's big into that, you know, and her Bixbyisms and her quotes and constructing a vision of the world that they can buy into, with all of its complexity and all of its trauma and drama and these kinds of things. But it's books. I mean, to a certain extent, the thing that helps Brand get through what he goes through is Miss Bixby's own love of narrative. You know, she's quoting the books that she loves to him, and he takes those quotes on and uses that to persevere. So,
do you, when you were in school, Dave, were you a person that found that you loved the experience of school or hated it? I ask this because there's a thing that never escapes me, and I've probably brought it up on the recording before, about when I was in undergrad in education, elementary education, one of my teachers said that all teachers tend to get into education for one of two reasons: because there was a teacher that you loved and you wanted to be like them, or because there was a teacher that really put you through some sort of torment and you wanted to be a change. Did you have that experience at all as a child?
Yeah, I definitely had torment.
Did you?
There was a lot of torment, but my torment wasn't teacher directed. I mean, my teachers were all great. You know, I don't remember having a bad teacher. I don't remember having a particular, like, one standout, you know, lead you down the path, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi teacher. But I had a lot that I admired. But I still struggled in school, elementary and middle school especially. And I think, you know, a lot of that was social and finding my own place and my own identity and all kinds of things, you know, bullying and just a lot of stuff to deal with. And so for me, like, a lot of people look at Mrs. Bixby's Last Day and they might focus on Mrs. Bixby. But of course, I look at Mrs. Bixby's Last Day and I focus on the three boys.
And the boys.
Because my school experience didn't start to get positive until I connected with the friends, you know, many of whom I still have, and actually managed to create a community that was welcoming and supportive and that shared the narratives that I shared and the interests and all those things. And so that's the joy that I find in that.
I saw that in your boys too, in this story, that I saw Miss Bixby was, I mean, as important, she is a very important character, but for the boys, she was their purpose. She was their, their reason for going on. And what I take away from that is just, what was my reason? What was my push? Was it a certain friend? Was it a something that happened in my life? Was it a girl? Was it not? I mean, what I love about this actually is that, I was talking to some of my friends about the difference between this story if it had all boys in it or this story if it had all girls, and the fact that we have all boys and that they don't sit around talking about the girls they like the entire time is right where I was. We didn't talk about when I was in middle school, we didn't talk about girls we liked. We were focused on our friends and that community that we had and what we meant to one another and what we made with one another.
Well, and there is one scene in the book where Topher and Steve do talk about girls, but it's so awkward and convoluted and structured and, you know, movie quotes and everything. Yeah. It's just highly coded at that point. And the conclusion they come to isn't one that girls would be happy with, probably. I don't know. But it's something that's very authentic to them. And yeah, it's one of the things where I don't know that I could have written. Maybe I could have this book from the point of view of three girls, just coming from where I am as a writer. It was just natural to me to have it be these three boys because they're irresponsible and I just wanted them to get in a lot of trouble. And I just look at my own kids. I have twins, one girl and one boy. And there's no way in a million years that my daughter would ever skip a day of school and go on an adventure like this, right? Because that's just not what you do. And she might get an absence or something like that. God bless her. I mean, she's brilliant and I love her. And she's beautiful. But my son would be like, oh, yeah? You want to skip school and go on an adventure? Yeah, sure, man. Let's do it. Because he would totally see that as being something epic and righteous, right? And all the.
Yeah. Well, you do write about a girl. You do write about Bixby, and I think that it's rightfully so that way, that we don't have these boys sort of at some age where they're girl crazy, but rather we have in this place. Do you mind if I read an excerpt for you? Is that okay?
As long as you don't make me read it, sure.
I would love to. I'd be honored to read it. This is sort of partway through, but it's just is it Topher? I think it's Topher. It is Topher talking about Bixby, and he says. Well, here, I'll just read it.
Okay.
Sometimes when Miss Bixby smiled at you, you had the feeling she'd been saving it just for you, that the smile actually had your name on it, that she could read your mind and knew you needed that smile more than anyone else in the room. Now there, that's a way for a guy to talk about the important people in their life. That's a really beautiful way for, I think it comes back to my students so often, and what they're able to share and what it means to have different adults in their life, both male and female, but the way that you know you're affecting them in ways that they might not be able to communicate it, but here we have that nice insight of Topher valuing that smile and what that smile meant to him. That sort of unspoken communication was maybe one of the most meaningful things that he could have received from her.
Mm-hmm. And what I love about that is that it doesn't take constant moments, right? It only takes like two or three. And, you know, people I've talked to who have talked about teachers that have inspired them, a lot of times they can isolate one story, like one 5-minute thing that happened to them, like one exchange, one conversation, one book that was handed to them, you know, one assignment, whatever it was, that was sort of the culminating moment. And that gives me a lot of heart, because I worry sometimes that, you know, teachers, obviously they're overworked and they have so many other responsibilities and data-driven society and the testing and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, well, how are you ever going to connect with my kid? And I'm like, all right, but it only takes one, right? It only takes one teacher. Not only that, it only takes one teacher saying one thing at just the right time to completely change a kid's life forever. Now, I don't know how you pick that moment, you know.
Right.
I don't know how you pull that off for all 30 kids in your class. But it's at least got to give you hope, you know, that, you know, just one little kernel can be enough to get them to blossom. So, you know, good for that.
Amen on that. Yeah. I think that
good for teachers.
Good for teachers. Yeah. No doubt. I think that, for all of us that are adults in the lives of any child, to know that you never quite know what action or word that you'll say or experience that is going to be what sticks for that kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because I was a worry of the novel, actually. And again, without giving anything away, there's a secret that Brand has of something that has transpired between him and Mrs. Bixby. And I was worried that it wasn't momentous enough, you know, this thing that they shared together. Because in some ways it's kind of mundane, but it didn't matter, you know, it's not what it is. It's not how it appears to us on the outside. It's what it means for him in the context of what he's going through. And the teacher or the parent or whoever it is, they can sort of zero in on that and say, you know, this is exactly what you need at this exact moment in time. And guess what? I just happen to have it for you. That's magical.
Yes.
It's really cool, no matter what it is, no matter what it ends up being. You know?
That's one of my other favorite quotes from your story. As again, on the many, many pages that I've highlighted, is Brand talking about, I have it marked, everybody loves a good sob story, so long as it's not their story. I don't know why. I'm not sure if people honestly care about other people, or they just want a way to confirm that they've got it better than someone else. Someone they can point to and say, it could be worse. I could be that guy. Don't get me wrong. I don't think people are really like that. Not most people anyway, but I think we're all guilty of it sometimes. Just like we're all guilty of doing the opposite, looking at everyone else around us and thinking that none of them understand that they are living in a fantasy land full of birthday cake and sunshine and can't possibly get what we're going through. That's our guy Bran, who does have a secret, who your heart feels for, and it doesn't need to be an end of the world crazy circumstance that he finds himself in, but it's something that man, I was hurting for Bran. I looked at Bran and I thought, I know this kid. I know Topher. I taught a bunch of Tophers before. I've taught a bunch of Steves before.
Yeah.
And how grateful I felt as an adult reading this book, as a teacher reading this book, to see those kids, and how I know that they're going to read this book and see themselves or see their friends and see, more importantly, the relationships with their friends in the way that everything matters. Every choice we make, it all matters.
Yeah. And the little things that we do, man, they add up in wonderful ways.
I do. Dave, thank you so much for not only just for coming on and chatting with me, but also for being the guy that you are behind this book, because you're a person I can tell that you really care, you really get it, and I'm glad that you worked as hard as you did to find these words, to make this story, to be able to share it with all of us. It's an important story, and I'm glad that we have it.
Well, thank you. That means a whole lot to me, honestly. It's been a wonderful adventure just getting the kind of response to the book that it's gotten. Because when you do something different than what you're used to or what you're comfortable with, obviously you're worried that it's going to just completely tank. And it's been really nice to see it resonate with so many people, and to see them bring so much of their own past experience and their own philosophy and their love of teachers and, you know, their understanding of friendship and perseverance and all these wonderful things that they've found in the book. And it's just really redeeming to me. It's like, wow, yeah. I wasn't sure that was going to come across, but it did, you know, hallelujah. and so, yeah, it's been terrific. Like I said, one big party.
It's beautiful. All right. Well, Dave, I'm going to give you the last words here, and bring it back to those children. I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. So what message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
The message I would like you to take to them is to honestly explore, to branch out. And this is has nothing to do with Mrs. Bixby so much. It has to do with the fact that you're in a library. And for me, that's what libraries are all about. They are about the chance to step outside of your shell and put on somebody else's hat and somebody else's clothes and somebody else's shoes and walk around. I mean, don't just pick up, you know, whatever diary of whatever it is, you know, number 7, because that's what you're used to reading. Like, go get a cookbook, right? And learn to make something fun. Or go learn about jellyfish. Or go learn how to draw something. Or if you only read mystery novels, pick up, you know, pick up a love story or pick up something funny, you know, that makes you snort laughter. I mean, I don't care what it is, but explore, like branch out, really dig deep and see what other kinds of things you're interested in. Because this is the time. I mean, life gets busy. But I remember as a kid, the really great thing about being a kid was when you happened upon something new, and exciting, you know, that movie that you saw, that rocked your world, or that book that you opened and you're like, I didn't know, that stories like this were out there. And so, yeah, branch out, explore, be innovative and inventive, and be kind. Just be kind to each other.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Min Lay and Isabel Rojas join me to talk about Let Me Finish, Min's debut picture book. And after that, Esme Shapiro shares her debut picture book about a fox and some Debbies. It's called Uko. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favorite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.